Very good day to you all. Welcome back to another edition of Euro Weekly as we go around the continent looking at some of the big stories from European football and, of course, from back here in England as well. This week on the show, I, Ollie Wilson, got to sit down with Mr. Chris Vokes, features editor of The Sportsman and an expert on all things English and Italian football, as the Epiphany holiday was upon us on Sunday and Monday, giving us some juicy stories coming out of Italian football, not to mention the return of Zlatan Ibrahimovic to Milan. Later on in the show, Jason was talking to Chris Winterburn about all things Spanish football, but let's kick right off with my chat with Chris and get into a little bit of FA Cup action and, of course, into a little bit of all things Serie A. Remember, of course, follow us on iTunes and on Google Podcasts, like and subscribe, anchor.fm as well, and we hope you enjoy the show.
It could be a culture shock from 2013 when Ferguson left.
To actually get him is a big coup for them, I think.
Braves, sort of more than anything, is a trophy. They haven't won a trophy now for, I think it's close to 12 years.
Yeah, no resolutions this year. I've not done them for a few years, actually.
No resolutions?
No, none at all. I suppose I tried them all at one stage, so now I just give up.
I think that just makes you a complete person, doesn't it? If you don't have to change anything, you kind of nailed it right now, haven't you?
That's a positive way of looking at it, isn't it?
Always about the positivity, mate. Unlike perhaps stories going on over the last few days with the FA Cup, which everybody's trying to put a positive spin on everything at the moment, and everybody's trying to put a positive spin on Italian football, particularly if you're a Rossoneri fan. We'll dive into all of that. Let's start with the FA Cup, though, in terms of, well, the overall rhetoric of the FA Cup. There's the magic of the cup. We had results like Rochdale getting the draw against Newcastle. We had, of course, Fulham beating Aston Villa on Saturday. Sheffield Wednesday beating Brighton Hove Albion, which I know I was very happy about, as was yourself. But do we buy that the magic of the cup is still there? Do you still get a tingle about the third round draw, the fourth round draw, and the ties when they crop up?
When my team's in it, I have an interest. But it's not the first choice for anyone these days, is it? I don't think. Certainly, when I was growing up, it was your dream of scoring the winning goal in the FA Cup final. I think that partly showing my age, but I think the younger generation now, it's the Champions League final that you dream of scoring the winning goal in. And I think we pretty much kind of killed the FA Cup as it was 20 years ago when Manchester United didn't even defend it. I think that there are some competitions that have lost their lustre, and you kind of look at and you can't quite pinpoint the moment it happened. You just know it happened. Well, we know when it happened in the FA Cup. That United didn't defend their trophy. It was an outward kind of acceptance that it wasn't one of the trophies that even the holders were going for that year, and it's just not been the same ever since. And I was at the Rochdale Newcastle game this weekend, and that was a great cup tie, but those are very much few and far between these days.
Aside from the Rochdale result, is there anything that did catch your eye and give you a little bit of magic this weekend? And I suppose results that we've seen, you can't really read too much into them in terms of the grand schemes of the league, because of exactly what you've just said, in that we haven't really got much of an FA Cup as it used to be anymore. It's a lot of reserve sides. But taking that into account, was there anything that does kind of stand out for you aside from that Rochdale one?
I think Watford Tranmere. The fact that it was 3-0 to Watford, and you can, as a Tranmere player fan, you're almost thinking already, well, league status, how do we go and bounce back from this? But actually, they really kind of gave it a go. And, this is a team that has been on the up in Watford recently, putting some results together, got to the final last year, obviously demoralised in the final, but they did have that great run last year. They'd have fancied getting through, particularly a 3-0 up. So for Tranmere to come back and earn a replay, I thought that was a great result.
Well, turning over a 3-0 lead is kind of impressive regardless of who you're playing if you're down by three goals. And Tranmere were exceptional at turning it about. Nigel Pearson, though, will want an immediate reaction after all the good work he's done at Watford to turn them around and have this decent run of form. And they, of course, go up against Tottenham coming up on the weekend. I mean, that's a big game for Nigel Pearson that you would fancy, actually, Watford to have a chance in, considering as Tottenham can't sort out who they are at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? I don't think Nigel Pearson will mind that too much, getting the kick in the pants in the cup, because, you know, getting a kick in the pants like that in the league could have been, you know, not terminal at this stage of the season, but certainly a huge setback. And because the FA Cup has this kind of lack of luster in the same way these days, a result like that can help you to kind of refocus in terms of the league. So, you know, not going out of the cup and getting the kick up the backside to remind them that, you know, you can't drop your levels at any point. I think that's probably not the worst result for Nigel Pearson.
Anybody going to give Liverpool that kick up the backside? Because nobody can at the moment right now. I mean, even a reserve side against Everton, and they still put themselves in the next round of the FA Cup.
Yeah, you've got to get closer than to kick them up the backside, haven't you? It's incredible, really. I turned it on for the last 10 minutes of the first half and just thought it was a matter of time before Everton would score. And in the second half, Everton just didn't give them a game. It really was. I know that the Everton fan base has reacted pretty badly to this one. They went to Anfield actually believing they had a chance. The way that they played in the first half, there was a kind of feeling amongst them that, you know, we're actually going to beat them at Anfield for the first time in 21 years. It's going to happen. And then the way that they just surrendered in the second half wasn't good enough. And Curtis Jones's winner was, you know, good enough to win any cup tie, really.
Something special indeed. You're a man that knows Carlo Ancelotti quite well, probably not on a personal basis, I would imagine, but in terms of your following of Italian football and the legendary manager that he is. But is Ancelotti, and this is, I don't want to slam him in English football just yet again, because it's too early to tell in his time in Everton, and he admitted he doesn't have or hasn't had the time to really impress everything that he wants to put on this Everton side already, as you'd expect. But considering what happened with Napoli, is Ancelotti now in danger of tarnishing that reputation and is perhaps a bit of a dinosaur in the managerial game these days?
I think it's a bit much to call him a dinosaur after like one failure of the job, really. You know, Bayern Munich fans might say it's two, but, you know, he still won something there. For Everton fans, Ancelotti is a great coup, because when you consider some of the managers they've been through in recent times and some of the difficulties they've had, particularly since 2013 when Farhad Moshiri came in, and you know, they thought that this money would be spent well. They've not particularly done that. They've not particularly progressed. You know, the structure of the club seems to be all wrong. It's a lot for Ancelotti to fix, and I don't think he's necessarily a fixer in that type of way. He seems a little bit as the right man at the wrong time for Everton. But that being said, you know, they've both got a lot to gain by this appointment as well. And if he can pick them up a bit, you know, stabilise them this season and then actually make them a top eight club again, I think that's a step in the right direction. You know, he won't be expecting everything immediately, and I don't think Everton fans are expecting everything immediately from him. But I think, you know, there are steps forward that partnership can make. I just don't think it will necessarily, you know, crack the top four or anything like that.
Let's stay with the Italian side of the game. And you talk about desperation with the FA Cup, perhaps with the media's branding of it still having the magic of the cup, and it's not really there. Desperation moves elsewhere in Italian football, with the Rossoneri, AC Milan, picking up Zlatan Ibrahimovic on a six-month deal. This just screams of a side that are crying out to be relevant in football in some way, shape or form.
Yeah, and you know, if you want to talk about desperation, God, that game today, Milan, that's about as bad as it gets. And I joked on Twitter afterwards that the first thing Ibra would have been doing after the game was calling LA and seeing if the Galaxy would have him back. Just such a poor performance right through that Milan team. There's all sorts of issues, and Samp should have had it won in the first half, really. A couple of chances they had. But, you know, as you say, they're a struggling club. I remember back in 2014 when they were knocked out of the Champions League by Atletico Madrid, just thinking, it's going to be a long time before we see Milan back on this stage. Even I didn't think it would be 6 or 7 years, and you know, there's pretty much no hope they're going to be in the Champions League. Well, they're not going to be in the Champions League, let's face it, next season. That's going to be 7 years then, at least. And I just don't see how they turn this around too quickly. I think we're looking at another 2 or 3 years before Milan get on the, back on their feet. And bringing in Ibrahimovic, trying to appease the fans somewhat, yeah, that's one thing. But actually fixing up this club is going to take a hell of a lot more than bringing in a 38-year-old who was great for them once upon a time.
It's astonishing to think Milan, above them in the table right now, Hellas Verona, Bologna, Torino, Parma, who were, of course, a team battling with their existence not so long ago, Cagliari and Atalanta. I mean, you've obviously got Roma, Lazio, Inter, Juve up there as well, but those are names that you just don't associate, or you wouldn't have associated maybe 5-10 years ago, actually, being above Milan in any way, shape, or form.
You know, obviously, a club like Atalanta has done really well in recent times, but the way that they wiped the floor with Milan before the winter break was just so stark. And I think in a lot of ways, today's performance was every bit as stark. You know, a struggling Sampdoria side, that they had the positivity Milan of Ibra coming back to the club. But there's just nothing about their performance that suggested anyone believes in the project at the moment. And it really is. I'd seen somebody say earlier today that, you know, a good Serie A needs a good Milan. Well, you know, we're struggling to call it a really good Serie A then for the next couple of years, because I just can't see Milan getting anywhere close to Inter or Juve for a long time yet.
And I certainly don't buy into that idea, because it's a great Serie A at the moment, with Inter pushing and going step for step, tit for tat with Juventus right now. I mean, statistically in the league table, they're almost identical with, of course, Inter to play later on today as we talk on Monday night against Napoli away from home. But goals scored, 35 Juve, 36 for Inter. Goals conceded, 17 for Juve, 14 for Inter. I mean, Conte is willing to go tit for tat and has a squad that can push this Juve side, an ageing Juve side, all the way right now, albeit them getting a 4-0 win over Cagliari with a Ronaldo hat-trick today.
I do think that finally, you know, we've got this Serie A title race, which, you know, we've not had since, what, 2012, when Juve won their first title, pipped Milan, or their first title post Calciopoli at least. So, yeah, there is that. There is at least that in the sense of hope. But in terms of the traditional Serie A kind of tussles that we all know, the top three all going for it, yeah, that's going to be a little while off. But certainly it is at least some comfort that, you know, Conte's gone to Inter, half of the Juve bordering from a previous regime is now Inter and really pushing Juve. And it's great to see that, at least in Serie A, we've got that title race back again. You know, one can only hope that with Lazio and Roma kind of hanging on the coattails a little bit, we might get a 3 or 4 horse race yet as we push towards the final running at the end of the season.
Well, that could change in, well, the next week or so, because, of course, Roma take on Juventus in their next outing coming up next weekend in Serie A. And you'd think at home, this Roma side against Juve, I know we've had the winter break and, of course, the Epiphany holiday has brought back Italian football action to our screens, but you would think a Roma side that's nice and rested could go and do something against Juve, albeit after their loss against Torino.
Quite possibly. The thing that just sticks in my mind is the amount of times we've kind of built up Juve-Roma games in recent years where I've really thought, is this a possibility for Juve to drop points? And it's just not happened. So, you know, I wouldn't want to start to take too much for granted. Obviously, with Roma's result yesterday as well, that didn't, you know, that doesn't give you too much hope in terms of their fixture coming up. But, you know, if Roma can get something next week, then there's a real possibility that we're starting to talk about the 3 and 4 teams involved in this race. But as I say, at the moment for me, it's Juve or Inter. And if Roma can finally kind of chuck a stick in the spokes of Juve, which I've been waiting, almost been waiting for many a year to try and spice up the title race, and they always seem to drop short. I remember quite a few kind of 4-0s and 4-1s where Juve have just kind of taken them to the cleaners on the big night when we thought we'd finally have a spiced up Serie A title race. So we'll see. But yeah, like I say, for now, for me, Juve and Inter have got to be the ones that you've got to consider as the only contenders for now.
Just finally on Serie A, Giampiero Gasperini at Atalanta. This Atalanta side is one of the highest scoring sides in European football at the moment. They are one of the most enjoyable sides to watch, in part because of their goal scoring, but also because, you know, defensively they're reasonably solid as well, and have been an absolute revelation. And it's almost a long-term project that Gasperini has been able to cultivate at Atalanta that's kind of gone under the radar until, of course, they got in the Champions League for this season and the form that they're having now this year as well. And it's not a side that's built up out of star quality players. It's very much a team chemistry unit. I mean, there are a lot of players that have bounced around certain areas. I mean, you only really have to look at the failure of Martin de Roon in English football, and then went straight back to Atalanta and managed to re-galvanise his career almost immediately. And it's Gasperini that seems to be getting that out of people. Why is Gasperini not mentioned as a potential manager anywhere else at a slightly bigger club?
It's tough to say, really, when you look at the success. As you say, it's a kind of team of misfits in a way, isn't it? Luis Muriel kind of did it for a little while at Udinese. Did okay at Sampdoria, but he's really kind of taken stuff onto a new level at Atalanta. You know, Papu Gomez, who, you know, had a good reputation at Catania, but nobody thought he'd be part of a Champions League, you know, last 16 side who are scoring goals for fun. Josip Ilicic did okay at Palermo, but, you know, he was following on the footsteps, really, of Javier Pastore, who really gone on to another level with Palermo. And, you know, it's kind of flat to deceive at times since then. He's really kind of stepped up as well. So there's a lot of players in there who you kind of thought, yeah, they've done their bit a little bit, but they're not going to do too much elsewhere, and they're not going to really kick on a side. They've done that. And it's absolutely phenomenal in terms of what Gasperini has been able to get out of this side. You know, it seemed as though he'd had his big chance with Inter, which lasted, what, 3 league games? Back in 2011, you know, he's been at Palermo and Genoa since, obviously, and there's been the kind of belief that his stock at the top of the table had gone. But what he's done at Atalanta is absolutely phenomenal, and with this group of players as well, you really couldn't have foreseen this, what, 3-4 years ago when he came to Bergamo. Absolutely superb job, and maybe in the summer you will start to see a couple of the bigger clubs saying, hang on, that's the kind of thing we need at our club.
We've got 3 choice ties next weekend. Just give us a winner for each of them. Roma, Juve?
I've said, haven't I? Juve, I think.
Juve, fair enough. Inter against Atalanta?
That's the toughie for me. I think Inter will just have enough. But I think that could be a really interesting one with the first few goals in it.
In the San Siro as well. So you would give into, I don't want to use an American phrase, but home field advantage on that one. And Lazio against Napoli.
I think that one's going to be just on the form guide. I've got to go with Lazio. I love when Napoli are doing well, but yeah, I think that's going to be a Lazio win.
Yeah, Simone Inzaghi's given himself a bit of credibility as a manager this year as well, much like Gasperini and Immobile. Immobile, you can't stop him. Can't stop him. There's a pun in there somewhere, but it's too late to make that at the moment. Chris, thanks for joining us, mate. Really appreciate you taking some time out, man.
No worries. Speak soon, mate.
Big thanks to Chris for joining us there. You can follow him on Twitter at Chris Vokes. That's at Chris Vokes. It's Chris with a K, though, and then Vokes, V-O-A-K-E-S. Now, there are some big ties coming up in the Premier League and in Serie A, as we mentioned this weekend, and BetVictor's got you covered for all of your needs if you fancy a little tipple on the big games in the Premier League. West Ham taking on Sheffield United. David Moyes back in charge, of course, of West Ham. And for them to get a win at Bramall Lane, it's 7-2 on BetVictor. For Sheffield United to get a win in both halves, both 45 minutes, that's 15-4. Manchester United take on Norwich. A draw there for the Red Devils at home against the Canaries is 9-2. A United 2-0 victory, 13-2. Two of the more popular markets at the moment on that one. And Watford against Tottenham. Nigel Pearson's side looking to bounce back from that 3-3 draw against Tranmere in the FA Cup. A draw against Jose Mourinho's Tottenham side will get you 7-1. A Watford 1-0 win at home against Tottenham 12-1, which isn't bad considering how all over the place Jose's side have been. Those big games from Serie A that Chris and I were talking about, Roma against Juve, Roma to get a 2-1 win, 21-2, a 1-0 win, 12-1, Juventus to get a 3-1 victory in the capital against Roma, 17-1. Remember, odds are subject to change. You must be 18 or over to gamble. Please gamble responsibly. Visit begambleaware.org for more information on that. Right, let's dive into a little bit more discussion from around European football as Jason Pettigrove got chatting with Chris Winterburn about all things La Liga.
Okay, Chris, I wanted to start with Real Madrid because on paper they had the toughest fixture of those teams at the top of the table. Getafe had only lost one at home before Saturday afternoon's match, and Jose Bordalas had certainly sent his players out to do a number on Madrid in the first half. Got to the point where it looked like the ref might lose control, I thought, but yet Zidane's side never really faltered. Although it was a mistake from David Soria that gifted Real the opening goal, I never really felt that it wasn't coming, and I wonder if that's going to be a sign of Zidane's side in this second half of the campaign, where they'll just sort of bide their time if needed rather than going all out to destroy teams from the first whistle. I mean, now they've gone to Barca, they've gone to Sevilla, Atletico and Getafe, and they've not conceded any of them. And they've been very considered in their play rather than the swashbuckling. I just wonder what your opinion was on where you think they're going to be going this second half of the campaign.
Bizarrely, I think this Real Madrid side has got all the hallmarks of the Zidane sides that he's constructed previously there. As you said, 3-0, sort of, it looks a really fine score on paper, but as you said, they did sort of wait for things to happen. The goalkeeping error was certainly fortunate. But what's interesting about this Real Madrid side is, yeah, they do sort of wait things to happen, but they don't have that player, that star player. I mean, it was Ronaldo, obviously, yeah. In Zidane's first time in charge, and they just sort of wait for him to do something. I remember games against Juventus where it was a difficult task and then he produced something. And I just think they lack that player. Obviously, they hope Hazard will come back from injury and be that player, but I think it's maybe a dangerous way to play without that star player. But I think he's certainly trying to go back to the formula, as you mentioned, that has been successful for him before and just recreate it.
Yeah, you mentioned Hazard there, and obviously Karim Benzema has been sensational since Ronaldo's gone. The thing that I see as well, there's a lack of goals really from anyone other than Benzema at the moment. Varane had a hand in a couple of them. Modric, of course, got the third. But I think if anything's going to derail Los Blancos' title charge, it is going to be that lack of goals because the other front men aren't really pulling their weight, are they?
No, they're not. And I think it's only due to the fact Benzema's played like, well, he's never really played before since Ronaldo's left. I mean, it's almost a case of, ironically, with Ronaldo as well, Wayne Rooney sacrificed a lot of the early years of his Manchester United career for Ronaldo to help him get the goals and ensure that the team didn't suffer from Ronaldo's sort of, not selfish attitude, but he was only interested in scoring at one end. I think Wayne Rooney hid a lot of that, as Benzema did for Real Madrid for a number of years. And it's been impressive, really, to see Benzema sort of return to the player he was at Lyon since Ronaldo's departed. He is a very much a goals-first kind of player. But in terms of the overall team dynamic, they do lack goals. And it's sort of concerning because Vinicius Junior's not really kicked on from last season. He's not had the opportunities to, obviously. You're looking at Rodrigo, who's come up with a number of goals, particularly in the Champions League. But again, you're looking at raw talent. I think what they hoped for, going back to Hazard, was that he would be able to step up in terms of goals and injuries and settling into a new club have just prevented him from doing that. So it's pretty clear that they would like to improve that. But bar going into the transfer market, it's difficult to see what can change in the next 6 months.
Yeah, one player that you hadn't mentioned there is Luka Jovic, who for me has to rank as one of the worst recent buys in Real's history. You also mentioned Man United as well, and I know there's been talk of Gareth Bale possibly heading to Old Trafford. Zidane hinted before the game that there's likely to be some movement in the transfer market this month for them. Do you see Bale finally going and perhaps Jovic or another player being moved on?
I think in January it's very difficult for these sort of moves to happen. As we all know, Ed Woodward's long-term dream is to bring Gareth Bale to Manchester United, the British Galactico. And he actually tried quite hard, well, back before we sort of knew how he operated to bring Bale to Manchester United and try and hijack that Real Madrid deal initially. But I just can't see it happening this window because, A, it's too complex a deal, and I don't think anyone at Manchester United is capable enough of pulling that off in January. B, it would have to include a player swap with Paul Pogba because Real Madrid, at boardroom level, don't want to pay the transfer fee over 120 million euros that it would require to buy Pogba. And then how do you structure a swap deal with a player who has missed pretty much the entire season in Paul Pogba and will miss at least the next month? So I can't see that happening. In terms of Bale's long-term future, I think everyone's agreed that he won't be at Real Madrid past this season. The relationship with him and Zidane is very much a marriage of convenience at this point, and it's an unhappy one, but he's getting to play football, and when he's on the pitch, he's actually delivering on the whole. But I can't see this move happening. But on the subject of Luka Jovic, remember Luka Modric had a very poor first season and was voted as one of the worst signings, so it can turn around for him, but it just looks as if
for that to happen, he's got to be given the opportunity to play. And I mean, just a couple of minutes at the end of the games here and there isn't really going to cut it for him, is it?
No, it's not. But what's interesting about Jovic is, I mentioned before that Benzema sort of gave his own career away to help Ronaldo in the early years at Madrid. Jovic is a very similar sort of player to Benzema in that way. He's very selfless. He looks to bring people into play. And as he showed with Frankfurt, he does have an eye for goal. So I think if he was to be given more opportunities in the second half of the season, and I think he should have been used more since Hazard picked up his injury, he could certainly supply and support and do the Benzema role for Benzema, who would be playing a more Ronaldo-esque role, if you will.
Yeah. So Real Madrid obviously went top after that result. Barcelona then jumped ahead of them on goal difference after their 2-2 draw at Espanyol. I think poor away performances are becoming a bit of a habit for them. They were completely bossed by La Liga's bottom club, who have been awful for the most part of this season. For the first 45 minutes, Barcelona weren't in it. They only really came to life, in my opinion, in the 20-minute period after the break when Arturo Vidal was introduced. The manner of that performance has surely got to signal the beginning of the end for Ernesto Valverde, hasn't it?
I think we were already on that long highway to the end of Valverde's time with Barcelona. I think that had pretty much been decided after the Anfield debacle, and it was just a case of not being able to get a coach that they wanted. And I think it's certainly looking like they want Ronald Koeman to come in after the European Championships. Whether that's the right move or not, that's a matter of opinion. But I think it's certainly, we are entering the last 6 or so months of Valverde's reign as Barcelona coach. But again, as you said, this was another sloppy away performance, and it was obviously, there's been a joke going around for a couple of years now, particularly since Valverde took charge, that Barcelona sort of just hope Messi does something and that gets them through. But it's getting to the stage now where it's almost become a parody, because they are sort of relying on Messi to do something. And then he's having more, and it seems silly to say, but he's having more off games than he has in years gone by. So we're seeing more of these disjointed Barcelona performances. And it says a lot that Arturo Vidal, every time he's been called upon this season, has delivered. He's been, as much as a player who comes off the bench can be consistent, he's been consistent. And it seems bizarre that almost at the start of the season, Valverde had cast him aside as a player who he didn't want and wouldn't want to use.
You mentioned Vidal, actually. I was going to ask you about him because he has made a difference every time he's played this year. I think he's had 6 attempts on target, 6 goals, 100% record, barely being given a chance. And there are suggestions that he's looking to engineer a move away, I think, possibly into a team that are looking to take him. And from what we understand, it is hearsay, but I mean, it's come from a number of different sources. He's in the process of suing Barcelona for money he says they owe him. They're obviously of a different opinion. At this point, for him to go, given what he's bringing to the team, that would be disastrous, wouldn't it?
It would be disastrous, and the fact they would then have to replace him. And we know that financial fair play isn't something that Barcelona can just ignore because of the vast investment they've put in recent seasons. So it would make very little sense for them to allow this situation to carry on. And I can't quite understand it. Obviously, the issue of the legal issue is another matter entirely, whether people want to link that to him wanting to leave or just general dissatisfaction with how he's been treated, I don't know. But it would certainly, I can't see the sense in them letting him go, especially when without him last night, they would have lost that game against Espanyol. I think he gave them the spark needed.
I think you're right. I mean, Barcelona have been far too predictable in a lot of games. I think teams are becoming wise now, to particularly to that Messi-Alba connection, even though obviously the left-back did provide a very good assist for Suarez to score the equaliser. There's been talk, actually, of Inter's Lautaro Martinez possibly being looked at as a longer-term replacement for Suarez. And, of course, the Neymar transfer rumours have never gone away, have they? Do you think that's where Barca need to strengthen, or do you think they need to sharpen up elsewhere? Because for me, they still look sluggish in defence. You know, Piqué, as good as he is, isn't getting any younger. Longley has been OK without being fantastic in a lot of games. What's your opinion on that?
Defensively, I think there are issues, but I'd put that on the back burner. I think Barcelona now have to look at this forward situation. They bought Griezmann, which to me didn't make much sense because he's always appeared more comfortable playing through the centre to me, and that's just my personal opinion. But and then he's not going to displace Suarez there, so maybe Griezmann's a long-term Suarez replacement, and then they look to get Neymar in the summer. I don't know, but that seems like something that's so difficult to do, you can't really use it as a basis to plan your moves prior to that on. Piqué is obviously coming to the end of his certainly his career at the very highest standards. Lenglet, as you say, has been okay. I quite like Samuel Umtiti, but obviously his high salary is problematic for a player who doesn't play every week. And I think they do need maybe to look at another central defender. Certainly one, if they could get Virgil van Dijk, that would be the sort of player they need, although every club could say that.
Absolutely.
I do think they're missing a truly world-class defender. But on your point about Lautaro Martinez, I think he'd be perfectly suited to a Barcelona team that needs a centre-forward. He's mobile. He very much reminds me of a younger Suarez, yeah. Maybe a little less aggressive in his off-the-ball movements, but certainly reminds me of that. But it depends which direction Barcelona want to go. I mean, we saw the great Guardiola team, certainly the first one in 2008-2009, have Eto'o and Henry in it, and that wasn't really any natural number nine there. They sort of played off each other, and then Messi had come centrally, certainly, as that progressed. So if that was something Barcelona wanted to get back to, I don't know if Martinez is the best choice. But then you look at who could be the coach, and obviously I mentioned before, Ronald Koeman seems like the likeliest appointment. This sort of centre-forward would fit in perfectly, but I think teams would have a job getting him out of Inter for less than €100 million.
Yeah, nobody comes cheap nowadays, do they? Least of all someone like João Felix from Atletico Madrid. Atleti came flying out of the blocks against Levante. They were on the front foot in that game for the first 15 minutes, which has been unusual, I guess, for a Simeone side this season. They found it difficult to score. 22 is the lowest in the top seven, and less than half of Barcelona's output. Scored two in the first 18 minutes from Angel Correa and Felipe, and that would have set them up nicely were it not for Roger Marti's goal, which came between the two. I think what we saw from the Rojiblancos Blancos in that opening period was a team that was really sort of aiming to make a statement at the start of the year and set their stall out, because to me they were beginning to run out of steam before the winter break. But then they reverted to type, certainly as far as this season's performances go. And after that, there was really sort of little else to write home about. Levante even had two-thirds of the possession across the 90 minutes. And aside with the players that Simeone has to be dominating those sorts of games, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's one of the problems. As you said, they came out of the blocks flying. In a way, it was a weird sort of game because there was a rather bizarre 8 minutes of intense action where all three goals came within that period. And Atletico certainly looked to have a lot of energy in that early stage. But then once they'd sort of realised, yeah, we're in a position to win this game, it was almost like the Simeone of old was like, OK, we'll protect what we have here. And one of the problems for this team has been that they've sort of started games with that attitude of, we've got individual quality that will make something happen here, and we can just sort of be solid and a goal will come. But when you've lost Antoine Griezmann, you do not have that one player that system relies upon to make a difference. And I think that's why we've seen players like Thomas Lemar struggle. Certainly, going forward, Diego Costa's injuries haven't helped. And with Felix, they were sort of hoping they've got this player who could take the mantle from Griezmann and be the player to make something happen. But he was never going to come in and instantly settle and start taking the control of that team in attack. So, again, like you say, it's difficult.
I suppose he's young, isn't he? But for well over 100 million euros, Atleti will want a better return from Felix than that. I mean, he, as I said, he was a disappointment. It was his ninth game in a row without a goal or an assist. I think he's got two in 15 games. You mentioned Thomas Lemar there. I just wanted to touch on suggestions that he could be heading to either Arsenal or Tottenham. Now, listeners of those teams are getting quite excited at the prospect, but we watch La Liga most weeks. I watch it every week, obviously. I'm sure you'd agree with me when I say be careful what you wish for, because he's been awful for Atleti for the most part. I mean, can you see that move happening? And if it does, what do you think he would bring to either of those sides?
I agree with you that he has generally been poor since he joined Atletico Madrid. I don't think he's ever truly settled. We've seen him have those flashes of brilliance and good performances, and then you think, okay, this is where we kick on, and then he never does. A number of them, particularly at the top level. So I think, obviously, the talent's there. One of the things that particularly attracted him to Simeone and Atletico was his work with Monaco when he could play, not as a central midfielder, but his work as a winger. The work rate was almost that of a centre midfielder. And I think that was one of the things that attracted him to Simeone, but it's just not worked out that way. Tottenham and Arsenal are both looking for players. They've both had poor seasons to this point. They've both changed managers, and the January window will be an opportunity for them to sort of make a statement, back the new coach they've appointed. But what I can't see is this deal happening this window, because Atletico need a permanent sale. They need a cash injection because they want to reinvest and bolster the forward line. As we've just said, goals have been a problem. They're looking at Edinson Cavani and also Paco Alcacer. But they need to let players go before they do that. And I don't think Tottenham or Arsenal are particularly in the position to buy Lemar permanently. Maybe Tottenham more so, although they spent significantly on Tanguy and Ndombele in the summer, and Arsenal invested in Nicolas Pepe. So I can only see a loan. I wouldn't rule out him going back to Monaco for 6 months, him playing well in a place he knows well, in a season where he hopes to make the European Championship squad. And then Atletico Madrid hope that performances there increases value.
Yeah, moving swiftly on, Atleti are one of the teams that are in the Spanish Super Cup, which is coming along this midweek with a final next Sunday. I read that Atleti, I think, had only sold around 50 tickets up to this weekend. And I don't think any of Real Madrid, Valencia or Barca have done a roaring trade in that respect either. For me, that's a really damning indictment of the decision to take the tournament to Saudi Arabia. A tournament that used to be a pre-season warm-up, so to speak. You know, some would say it's akin to England's Charity Shield game. Given that it's now been turned into a Final Four type tournament, can you foresee a scenario where the four teams involved will take it more seriously than they would perhaps normally? Or do you think this is a chance for the managers to rotate and give others a chance, which I suppose then means there's no injuries to key players for games which will be coming up immediately afterwards?
Unwanted tournament from all the teams taking part. I don't think any of them are particularly keen on the additional matches. The trip, not so much, because I think most teams at this part of the year would have a warm weather training camp in this region anyway, so I don't think that necessarily changes, but they wouldn't have the additional fixtures and competitive fixtures at that. I don't think that helps anyone. We've already seen this weekend, reports emerging that Valencia aren't happy with the structure of the tournament and how the bonus payments are being dished out. So, again, teams are going into this tournament unhappy with the format of it. And I think we will see heavy rotation from coaches. I don't think it's going to be a situation where winning it is the be-all and end-all. It's not going to make a big difference to any of the four teams involved. It's not going to bolster their reputation or anything really. So I think they're going to rest players, hope to avoid injuries. And then you look at Real Madrid, who've had an awful injury record this season. They sort of need this tournament like a hole in the head. It's just not going to help them in the slightest.
Okay, I'm going to put you on the spot. Who's your pick to lift the trophy and why?
Which one, the Supercopa or the La Liga?
The Supercopa. The La Liga we can talk about later in the season.
it's difficult to predict because I don't think it. I think it will be treated very much as the cousin of the Champions Cup that we see in pre-season, where teams fly all over the world to play games. If I was to guess, I'd probably say Barcelona because they've got the deepest squad, maybe. But other than that, it's difficult to say. It's impossible to predict when you don't know what teams are going to be put out there. But I'll just say Barcelona based on the fact they've got a deepest squad and Messi.
Okay. Well, if you agree with Chris, or even if you don't, make sure you get onto betvictor.com. We're recording this podcast on Sunday morning, and as of this moment, the Super Cup odds aren't yet available, but I'm reliably informed that they will be on site soon. Remember that those odds will be subject to change. You must be 18 or over to use BetVictor. Please gamble responsibly, and for more information on that, visit begambleaware.org.
Big thanks to Jason. Big thanks to Chris there as well for joining. Jason, you can follow Chris on Twitter at CM Winterburn. That's at CM Winterburn. You can follow Jason on Twitter as well, at Jason Pettigrove. That's at Jason Pettigrove. And myself, @O_J_Wilson. We'll be back in about a week's time or so with more European football discussion. Until then, enjoy the football. Get on to betvictor.com, on at betvictor on Twitter. And of course, get on to all the latest odds as well on the website, betvictor.com. And get on to iTunes, Google Podcasts and Spotify for subscribing, reviewing, liking and following the podcast. Until next week, enjoy the games.